Hello and welcome to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM. I'm Sean Delaney and I'm glad you can join me today for our weekly mixture of chat and inspiration on the topic of teaching and learning. If you like what you hear, or if you're new to the programme and you'd like to listen back to any previous editions, you can download hundreds of previous podcasts by going to seandelaney.com and clicking on the Podcasts tab. One of the workshops presented at the Conference of the Computer Education Society of Ireland, or CESI, came from Joanna Norton. It was titled, Today's Teacher, Tomorrow. In this workshop, she dealt with the need for teachers to be adaptable in order to promote problem-solving, divergent thinking and flexibility in their students. Joanna Norton teaches at the University of the Arts in London. Her current area of research is investigating how the principles of social justice can inform the direction of next generation teaching and learning. She is currently collaborating with concept designers, instructional designers and learning technologists to consider how classroom learning can be applied to address real-world challenges. When I met up with Joanna, I first asked her why she was attending the CESI conference.
I'm particularly interested in the theme of this conference, looking at 21st century learning and what a 21st century teacher is and the skill sets that we need. I've been researching this and I'm really interested to see some practical examples that teachers and school leaders, etc., would bring to this event to learn from that and to see if I can get some ideas for my own practice.
And what is your own area of practice?
I work in higher education. I work in London at the University of the Arts, and I work across disciplines with adults, primarily in the area of academic language. So I work with architect students, interior design students, fashion students, etc., helping them with our project work effectively.
And when you say it's about academic language, is it for them to learn the language, to acquire the academic language, or is it something else?
Well, a significant proportion of students in higher education are international. So there would be a language requirement that they would need to fulfil. There's also academic skills classes for Indigenous English speakers who need help with academic language to write essays, talk about their work, critique their work, prepare portfolios for presentations, group work. All of the 21st century skills really that we and competencies that we require young people to have.
And how does technology help them acquire those competencies?
Well, this is my own area of interest because I'm trying to look at what is beyond technology. And one of the critiques that I have of it is it just seems to be endless tools that teachers need to learn. And I don't think that there's enough teachers asking questions about how we are going to use it to build the competencies, the skills that both students need and what we need in terms of moving forward. So in many cases, they have to use tech tools to create like 3D animation, to design a space, but they also have to use pen and paper and create a paper model. They are also required to think. And while postgraduate students often have very good tech skills, and as well as undergrad, there's a real deficit there, I think, in terms of critical thinking and researching, reading. And I think maybe we're just looking too much at technology and not enough on the thinking in terms of how it can deliver, help us to achieve goals.
And what kind of questions should people be asking about technology?
Well, what is the vision we're trying to work towards? So in the area around housing, what is the vision for housing? How can we create more social housing? How can we create social housing that's worth living in?
And so how do you connect that to technology in education?
Well, these are the questions that we're trying to ask. So there can be an emphasis with students coming in with the technology, but not really understanding how it can be applied. So not even considering maybe going out and speaking to people about their ideas. So, for example, with some international students that I work with currently, they have worked as maybe editors of fashion magazines. So their design skills are phenomenal, but their critical thinking skills are really weak. And particularly if they have some experience of working and have been in managerial positions, they're not used to being challenged or having people ask them questions. So that's also really interesting. And given that they're decision makers, I think there's an opportunity there to really kind of put their own practice up for examination.
So it's like as if you want to get these designers or these students to think about how they can use their skills to solve big world problems.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly it. So, what's the vision? How do we get there? And then how do we harness tech tools to deliver on that vision? as opposed to just looking at, you know, how to use this tool and that tool. You know, what is the objective here for greater social good, for humanity? But the challenge arises also in higher education, where not all students see that as their goal. Higher education, for many students, for them, they're there to get a return on investment. They're not there to solve problems. They're there to get a job or move themselves forward. So there's a lot of tension within the whole tech framework. So a lot of I would call them mission statements, like a lot of these things that are said in terms of, you know, teachers and students are going to co-create new knowledge, and as we walk off into Narnia, well, you know, negotiating what actually this new knowledge is going to be, who is going to benefit, it's full of tension, because we all don't agree. And so it's constant negotiation in terms of how we move the debate forward.
So how do you go about building agreement with the students that you work with on these kinds of applications of their expertise?
Well, that's one of the reasons why I'm here, because I'm really struggling with that. because I've had a lot of pushback from students who are saying that I'm asking too many questions. My classes are too political. They're not interested in these problems. And these problems don't concern them. And they want to know how they... particularly if they're assessed on an essay, they want to know how they can get an A or a B in their essay, and that's it. It's really interesting when the greater narrative is all about, you know, how students need to be able to think and ask questions. You know, it'd be really interesting if we ask students if that's what they want. Many don't want to rock the boat, challenge the status quo when they're desperately trying to enter the world of work. So, you know, I think the whole debate really hasn't been thought through. I think the vision is lacking. And then the training for teachers is not there. And just expecting technology to kind of be able to come in and solve this without really understanding where we're going, I think, is won't work for me anyhow.
So how do you actually work with your students then? I mean, is it all about discussion, or do you... like, are there any examples you can give them of people who have used their skills and their expertise to solve big world problems?
Yes, there's two examples that I look at. I'll give you one, actually. There's a project that was designed by the French architect Vincent Callebaut. He's Belgian by origin, but lives in France. And his project is entitled Paris 2050. So this is a grand vision of what Paris will look like, obviously in 2050. And Paris is committed to reducing greenhouse gases by 75%. So he's created this mock-up and, in terms of looking at six different types of constructions around the city for living, transportation, but all of which will, you know, serve the smart city. So it's really about breaking that down and looking at how, what it means, what a smart city means, and breaking it right down to community level. So to be thinking about, you know, what's Drumcondra 2050, what's Cavan 2050, what's Letterkenny 2050, and really starting to think about these questions. Another one will be about the area of climate change. This is what I'm going to talk about tomorrow, actually, in my talk, is looking at particularly with the bad weather we've had here. People might often think about climate change being local. Well, when we look at the global figures, where some of my students come from, as we know, climate change is a huge challenge in a place like Bangladesh. So estimates suggest that by 2050, or in the next 10 to 15 years, anywhere between 20 and 350 million people will be on the move. So my question for the teachers tomorrow is, particularly those who are from rural Ireland, if, as leading climatologists in Bangladesh assert, that these people have the right to walk to the countries that have caused climate change, how many are we going to take? This would kind of put the Syrian crisis just into, you know, into nothing. It's, you know, 1 million people. When we have this many, how are we going to address these issues? And these are the challenges that young people today will have to deal with. These are the questions we need to be asking. So what I'm looking at is, how do we as teachers ask ourselves these questions? How do we engage with questions, ideas that maybe are a complete anathema to us, that we totally disagree with? And how do we ensure that we are teaching critical thinking skills? What is our own confirmation bias on these questions? That's really what I'm interested in.
And I'm still trying to make the connection between those questions, which are big questions, and technology in education.
Well, this is it. Like, in terms of the tech tools that are available, when we actually start breaking down these problems and looking at climate change, right, so what tools then do we need to start going out and interviewing people? Do we want to record what they're saying? How are we going to analyse that? How are we going to gather all that data? So, those tools are available, and particularly in higher education, there are students across universities who have them, the lecturers are there. But what is the question? What do we want to use it for? What problems do we want to solve? And I think we need to take a step back and question those and then say, okay, now how do we bring technology in?
The problems you've identified so far in the interview, things like homelessness and climate change, like these are huge problems.
Yes. Like,
is it more helpful if people try and break them down into more micro questions, or is it better to deal with them at this large level when they seem almost insurmountable or unsolvable?
No, and this is what 21st century education is. First of all, they are unsolvable. For me at the moment, I can't see a way through them. But definitely, I think in terms of presenting the challenge, presenting solutions that maybe other thinkers in other countries have got, and then working backwards, creating a project plan and looking at how this can be broken down and how then we need technology at each phase to help us to negotiate, ask the right questions, deliver solutions, etc.
How did you get into this whole area?
I started working with migrant students in London about 20 years ago, and I've just gradually worked. I've never stayed in the same place, and I think that has really benefited me now. I have taught in a range of different contexts, so in classrooms that are really well resourced to schools in East Africa that have got nothing. So I think it's that constant flux and that constant movement that has kind of given me a different perspective of looking at things. I think I'm older now, of course, and when I was as a younger teacher, and I'm a lot more confident maybe asking these questions and addressing them. And I think I've a lot more confidence in the fact that I don't know the answer. So I think I've studied creativity. I've done an MA in applied imagination, and my PhD is going to look at, you know, what a 21st century teacher is. So it's kind of like bringing this whole eclectic skill set together to try and help us move forward, because I'm trying to move forward. I don't have the answer.
And how do you even go about looking at what a 21st century teacher is?
Well, the literature, I think that most of the literature has been written by industry, you know, so it's these big grand statements. But like actually, you know, on a really local level, when you look at the abortion debate that's coming up, like I was thinking about this when I was driving in, now, irrespective of maybe how you might feel or I might feel about it. So let's say I'm pro-choice and you're not. And, you know, how would I really feel about, you know, inviting you to Skype my class and sharing your views with my class? You know, these are real issues that, you know, we probably have to look at as teachers. And, you know, am I really, if I chose to look at this topic, am I really teaching critical thinking skills if I'm not open to bringing you into my class via technology, in this case via Skype, or coming in to do face-to-face? You know, we talk about as if teachers that we know what critical thinking skills are, but actually when we drill down into it, you know, how willing are we to engage with these debates ourselves?
And to stray away from the consensus.
No, exactly. And, you know, these are not questions that I wouldn't be comfortable with either. I'm not saying that. And so one of the tasks that the teachers have to do tomorrow is to collaborate with a school in Texas that believes climate change is God's will.
And are you going to do that as part of the workshop?
Part of the workshop. Okay. Yeah. So actually, when you look at what collaboration is, are we just kind of...
Are you going to do that live?
I don't think so. I'll just be here now.
No. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I think it's the whole idea, you know, we can look at, it's a very short session. So obviously at a SESI conference, there's a certain level of expertise I think you can expect all the teachers to have. But in terms of collaboration, which is the area I'm going to look at tomorrow, is it simply an echo chamber? That's my question. You know, do we simply gravitate towards people who look like us, think like us, are white, middle class, have all been university educated, and we can come across some and agree on some scientific consensus and select a tech tool, and because you're in Romania and I'm in London and somebody else is in, you know, County Clare, that we're collaborating. But, you know, do we need to move beyond those safe zones, and how do we do it? Are we willing to do it?
But it's even so much easier now to stay in a safe zone because of social media, because you can just surround yourself by people who are like you, or who think like you, or who share your kind of ideas.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I just think, you know, what I'm looking at in terms of my own research is really just presenting these questions. So before we even start to think about what technology we're using, like what is the rationale, what's the question, are we challenging our own practice, are we modelling the challenges that we experience for students because we don't know the answer? How do you model confidence when you yourself don't have it?
It was Adrienne Webb who suggested to me that I should speak to you. And she told me about you brought some teachers or some educators around London. Can you tell me a little bit about that visit?
Yeah, it's part of a programme that I've designed for teachers in the area of applied creativity. So this is the first of four sessions. It's called A Morning of Inspiration. So it's basically trying to remove the barriers between the school and the community to allow for the free movement of learning. Now, let's say, for example, you come here to St. Pat's. This is your classroom every day. Your class is based here. And maybe you live in Dundalk. And maybe you've been here for like 5, 10, 15 years. Well, I guarantee you, you'll have taken the same route in and the same route home, and you'll be just stressed about the traffic, etc. And probably not engaged with the dynamics that have been taking place over the course of those 10 years. If you're white, if you're middle class, if you're university educated, already you will have a different background, different skill set, different set of assumptions. And how can we move out into the community to look at the mundane, to find areas of interest? And this whole course is, I based it on James Joyce's Ulysses, where he looked at the mundane of Dublin, and actually to go out into the community that we're tasked to serve and look at the mundane in the community. So I brought the teachers over in London. We did a morning of inspiration, and we looked at couture fashion, we looked at architecture, we look at going down rabbit holes and using the tube, looking at digital photography, and just to observe.
When you said looking at them, yeah, that's what I was going to say. Mm. What? Just to observe them? And
well, there's a store in London called from Sonia Rykiel. She's a very famous fashion designer, and the idea was to go into her store and just to see what good design looks like. So she was also, she died actually last year, but she was also a very prolific writer. She loved literature, and on the left bank in Paris, she could see that bookshops were disappearing. So what she did was, in her stores here in London and in Paris, and she's got others around the world, but she, in the one in London, has 14,000 first editions of the French classics. When you walk in, I wasn't sure when I first saw it, like, is it a boutique? Is it a bookshop? You know, what is it? And it was just her way of fusing literature with fashion. Really good design, the smell, the ambiance, the layout. So the idea of bringing teachers in there was to kind of look at what good design is, and then to consider and reflect on how they use books in their classroom. Could they make simple design changes to make the to create a more conducive environment for learning? Those type of questions. And when we went and we looked down, we went to look at architecture. I brought an architect in who spoke to the teachers. Just the objective here was to look at a subject that you would not normally engage with. So most of us probably wouldn't engage with architecture. So even though we may have studied maths or whatever, but this is what 21st century learning is. You will have to collaborate with people across disciplines, and you yourself may know nothing about it. So how would you engage with a subject like architecture? How could you incorporate that into your lesson? How do you model your own insecurity for your students?
And how did the teachers who participated in this morning, how did they react or respond to it?
They loved it. They loved it. Well, you need to. Well, that they told me they loved it. But the feedback was fantastic, and I think as well it's so different, you know, because 21st century learning is about moving outside of the classroom. It is about looking at how technology allows us to do this. It's about, you know, looking at the expertise that are in the communities, whether there's economic challenges, whether there's levels of diversity. There's lots of people there. There's lots of storytellers there. So how can we use technology to remove those barriers and to allow for that free movement of learning? Like, so, for example, like Mags and Hassan over there and Pana, they've got really good technology skills. So it's really about, at that level, okay, you have the expertise now in tech. Let's take a step back and let's think of the question.
A lot of your work is in the area of adult learning. Have you thought at all about learning, say, for primary school children or post-primary children?
Well, this is the same thing. I've been training primary school teachers and post-primary, and looking at how they can engage with their community. There's real issues, social issues with children coming into school haven't eaten. There's real issues around housing. There's real issues around the disappearance of public spaces. So, the example that I gave you, if you're driving from Dundalk to Drumcondra every day, you're totally unaware, you're removed from those community challenges. So really, by going out and engaging in the community, bringing technology out, it allows you, in in terms of what Freire would say, is to read students as texts, is to understand their context and bring that into the classroom. Or have the lesson outside.
So Joanna, you've developed an app yourself. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, I'm developing a platform that's called Keywords Biology. And within that, I'm developing a series of apps, the first of which is due for release. It's called Keywords Biology. And Keywords Biology is to help young people with the academic language of science, of course, in this case, it's biology, and then link the topics within that app to global challenges. So by addressing literacy and linking literacy to innovation and creativity, I'm hoping we can move away from the remedial overtones of literacy and address both lower and higher order skills simultaneously.
So it's not just for non-native speakers of English?
No. So did extensive testing. So obviously testing with young people who speak English as a second language from the ages of 10 to 19, but also young people who would struggle to read, don't like reading. And also what was really interesting in testing was young people at TY level. They found it really beneficial just because it reassured them in terms of their own learning and what they had learned. But what's new, of course, is linking it to innovation. It's linking it to real-world problems. And so there's a series of beta programs starting in the US, in Ireland, in the UK, the Middle East and China. So moving forward, my question will be, what will a 21st century classroom look like from the grassroots up? If we could create our own, what would it look like? And how would we use technology to do that?
So if someone wants to find it, just go and put keywords in the...
keywordsenglish.com.
keywordsenglish.com, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And finally, who or what inspires you?
In literature, it would be James Joyce. In photography, it would be Don McCullum. In architect, it would be Zaha Hadid. I also love Norman Foster. I love reading. I love travelling. I love food. I love being with creative people. And I love meeting people who are more informed than I am.
And there's no educator mentioned there.
But aren't we all educators? You know, I think my main inspiration, the reason because obviously I work very hard in this area, is my own parents who had a shambolic experience of education in the 1950s and 60s. And one of my aunts who was in the Magdalen Laundries, and her experience, you know, would drive me to ensure this doesn't happen. So despite the abuse and the horrific experience that she had as a young girl, what she talks about to this day is the lack of education she had in there. And the abuse was horrific, and I won't go into it now. But that's really telling that, you know, she was sent there actually my grandparents were told it was, she would be educated, she would get an education, something that she wasn't getting in rural Ireland at the time. And she was sent there, and she came out illiterate. And nobody has been held to account for what went on in there, particularly in the Department of Education. And really what this is about, my project is about ensuring that if you have literacy challenges, if you have other challenges in life, that you can still be exposed and introduced to 21st century thinking. It's not the reason to be left behind. And how do we all move forward together? Because we can't address problems unless we're doing it together.
And was your own education in Dublin?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, I'm from Walkinstown. So I went to the Assumption in Walkinstown, and then I travelled quite a lot. Then I went back to university, and I went to university actually in the UK, and I stayed there and ended up teaching over there. And I've been in higher education now. So I worked in education management. I didn't like it. I hate the neoliberal model of education. I'm not going to say much more about it.
Well, so what do you think? What do you think should replace it? Because I've talked to Stephen Ball on this programme before.
Oh, have you? Okay, yeah. Well, I'm totally opposed to corporatisation, particularly of higher education, but actually in the UK, the corporatisation of second level and primary level is well and truly on its way. In many cases, I think sometimes that professional development for teachers is not keeping pace with change. That needs to be addressed, and we should be left alone to create what we think is required, what is viable. But that can't happen unless we are also exposed to collaborative practices with industry, with non-profits, with wider society. I think we operate in a vacuum. I think we're in a silo. And I think many teachers would feel they lack experience in going out, maybe, if you look at the big tech companies, going off into Facebook and Google and having conversations and starting to build relationships. But that's a whole new different skill set. But yet the 21st century agenda talks about that. But who's training us to do it?
And have you a favourite writer or blogger or broadcaster about education? You know, someone that you keep coming back to, or any book that you find?
Well, Freire, I've read all his books. And
Paulo Freire, Pedagogy of the Press.
I certainly would come from that school and that line of thinking. I think that we should be going back into the community. Because one of the stories I tell my students regularly is that I live in Luton, actually, and I commute into London. And as I go down to the train station, I pass homeless people who are reading. And I go into my classes and my students don't read. And nothing gives me greater pleasure than to tell them, these homeless guys should be in here and you should be somewhere else. You know, how can you come in and do particularly postgraduate study when you don't read? So I'd be very much influenced by Paulo Freire, but my values don't align with the notion of education for as a return on investment. You know, I believe education is transformational, but many of my students have been privately educated all their lives. They're financially very well off. Their parents are extremely wealthy. So they're not interested in transformation, are they?
And why don't they read?
Why don't we all read? I mean, it's easy to say that students are not reading, but actually many adults don't read, many teachers don't read. We might read a book over Christmas, but we're not active readers. So why are we not reading? It's easy to always say, well, why don't students read? Is it because of technology? But are we not bringing books in and showing students what we're reading every month? No. Why is that not happening?
And that provocative question from Joanna Norton brings this week's Inside Education to a close. My interview with Joanna was recorded at the Conference of the Computer Education Society of Ireland, which was held earlier this month in Dublin City University. Remember, you can find hundreds of previous Inside Education podcasts at seandelaney.com. My book about teaching, Become the Primary Teacher Everyone Wants to Have, is available online, or you can ask for it in your local library. From me, Sean Delaney, goodbye. And thank you for listening.